In the previous lesson, we spoke about the fourth story of Sipurei Maaseiyos, and we went through it one time with a little bit of clarification. We'd like to devote this session to as much commentary as we can, commentary and clarification of that story, the fourth story in Sipurei Maaseiyos, Rabbi Nachman's stories, which is entitled The Bull and the Ram, or the king who decreed, Shmad, who decreed that all the people in his country have to give up their faith, and also referred to sometimes as the story of miracles. Rabbi Nachman began the story by saying that the king had issued a decree that people had a choice, either to leave his country and leave all their possessions behind, everything completely, or, if they choose to stay, they have to give up their religion completely. Some left, some remained, and those that remained, some of them conducted their religious practices in hiding. However, they weren't permitted to do it openly. This king died, his son took over the kingdom, and he began to lead the kingdom with power. He conquered many countries. He was very bright, and because of the fact that he exerted tremendous control and power, a conspiracy took place against him. There were ministers that conspired to overthrow him, to murder him and his family. One of the ministers was one of these Maranos who was observing his religion, his Jewish religion, secretly. He found out about this and revealed it to the king. The king was able to see that it was true. He ended up capturing and punishing the ministers that had formed this conspiracy, and then he wanted to reward this minister. And he thought, what can I reward you with? Give you honor? You have the greatest honor. You're a minister of government. Wealth? You're wealthy. So he said to this minister, what can I possibly do for you? What would you want? What honor would you want that's even greater than the honor that you have? And what wealth would you want that's greater than the wealth that you have? The minister first confirmed he had the king swear by his throne and by his crown and by his kingdom that he would keep his word. And when he did, that's when this minister said to him, the only thing I want is to be given the privilege of wearing my talis and tefillin publicly. To have the privilege of being able to wear his tzitzis and tefillin, his talis and tefillin in public. The king was very angry because this was a decree that had sealed the country completely. They knew there were no practicing Jews in the country, and now this person broke through. But the king had no choice. The fact that he had sworn by his kingdom, by his crown, and the following day this Jew wore his talis and tefillin in public. These two mitzvahs, talis and tefillin specifically, are the most basic representations of our accepting the kingdom of Hashem upon us, the Oil Malchus Shamayim, as it's called. Because of the fact that we know that the Shema, when a Jew recites Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echod, declaring our faith in the unity of Hashem, the recital of the Shema goes together with two mitzvahs. One is tefillin. The Gemara tells us that if a Jew recites the Shema without wearing tefillin, it's like he's testifying falsely, because in the tefillin, in the Shema, we speak about the tefillin. And the Zohar HaKadosh says the same thing is true regarding tzitzis. If a person were to recite the Shema without wearing tzitzis, they're testifying falsely. So that this prayer, the Shema, the three paragraphs of the Shema, which are the most basic and comprehensive declaration of our faith in Hashem, is tied in specifically to these two mitzvahs, tzitzis and tefillin. And these represent a Jew's faith, complete faith in Hashem, and loyalty, and accepting the word Shema itself. The commentaries tell us, makes up the first letters of Oil Malchus Shamayim, that by reciting this and by observing the mitzvahs associated with it, which are the tzitzis and tefillin, a person shows that their true king is Hashem. and that their faith is specifically in Hashem. It's interesting to note, the Shelo HaKadosh points out that we know the most basic name of Hashem is, as we pronounce it, Ado, and then Noi. And the Shelo HaKadosh says that for those that are familiar with Hebrew, this word seems not to have any meaning, any translation. There is a word in Hebrew, Adoni. Adoni means my master, singular. There is a word, Adonai, which means my masters, plural. Where does this word, Ado and then Noi, fit in with the Kametz? And the Shelo HaKadosh explains that each and every single person living in this world has different authorities over them. Children have parents, there's the policeman, there's the mayor of the city, there's the president or the king of the country, there's many, many examples of authoritative figures who are masters. If we were to refer to Hashem as Adoni, my master, Chas v'Shalom, it could be construed that Hashem is part of a list. A person has this master, Master 1, Master 2, Master 16, and Hashem is one of those. We want to be able to say that Hashem is my master who is above all my other masters. As we refer to Hashem as Melech Malchei HaMalochim, the King of Kings, the Boss of Bosses. The Shelo HaKadosh says that's what's represented in that komatz under the Nun, the way we pronounce Hashem's name. A chirik, a dot, a komatz is a combination of a line and a dot underneath. So that this word, when we pronounce it Noi, Ado and then Noi, it's as if we're saying that Hashem is Adoni, he's my master, of Adonai, of all my masters. He is the one who is above. So that even though a Jew obviously respects authority, whether it's legal authority or all types of authority, a person lives in a country, they respect the authority that's there. However, always with the understanding that the highest authority to which all other authorities have to be subservient to is Hashem. So that, for example, the Torah tells us that if parents would request of a child to violate the Shabbos, to go into a car on Shabbos, and the parents would quote a commandment of the Torah says, respect your parents, respect your parents' wishes. The response to that would have to be that the child would say, I'm going to show my respect for you by not going into the car, by seeing to it that both I and you do not go against the command of the one, the authority who's over both of us, the authority of Hashem himself. Rabbi Nizal continued to tell the story in which we found that there were stargazers that revealed to the king that his family would be... The only thing that could possibly destroy his family would be an ox, a bull, and a ram, a shor and a seh. And this was written into the chronicles of the kingdom, and he instructed his sons to lead the kingdom in the same manner as he did. We skipped a step. This king who ruled with power and authority, after he passed away, his son took over, and he decided to lead the kingdom with softness. He saw what had happened to his father, that his father had almost been murdered and had the whole family wiped out because he ruled with an iron fist. He decided to rule gently and softly, and he was the one who was told by the stargazers that the only item that could destroy their family would be a bull or a ram, a shor and seh. And this was documented, and he instructed his children to see to it also when they take over the kingdom, to conduct it with gentleness. The commentaries explain that obviously this shor and seh represent the tefillin, which is made from the hide of an ox, a bull, and the seh, which represents the ram or the sheep, is from the whose wool the tzitzis that we wear is formed. So that this king was being told that if his kingdom was any type of, whether it's a secular kingdom or a Jewish kingdom, as long as he would not challenge Hashem's authority, the kingdom of Hashem, which is symbolized by these two symbols, the bull and the ram, the tefillin and the tzitzis, as long as he wouldn't challenge that, his kingdom would be safe. He would be okay. Sure enough, when his son took over, he didn't follow the instructions of his father, and he started leading the kingdom with power, like his grandfather had, conquered many countries, and decided to make an announcement that nowhere in the country should there be found any bull or ram, any shor v'aseh. And he figured this way, by eliminating it, he doesn't have to be afraid of anything at all. By seeing to it that these animals would not be found at all, he wouldn't have to have any fear. And therefore he could control the country with power, with might. And at one point, this king just came upon a great wisdom as to how he would go about conquering the entire world without a battle. And we said he studied, he analyzed, and he came to the conclusion that the world is divided into seven climates, seven different types of climates. And we know that there are seven stars, in a sense, where each one of these seven heavenly spheres, where each one of these shines upon a different section of the world. And there are also correspondingly seven types of metals, where each one of those heavenly spheres shines into one of those types of metals, so that these would seem to represent the entire world, these seven climates, these seven types of metals. And in fact, we know that according to the Torah also, Hashem created the world in 7 days, totally, 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. This is because of the fact that when we speak about the attributes of Hashem, they are also divided up into seven basic attributes: chesed, kindness, gevura, strength, judgment, tiferes, beauty, netzach, victory, hoid is another type of beauty, yesoid, foundation, and malchus, kingdom. These seven attributes are the ones which Hashem chose to display and to reveal in the physical world. And as such, there are many items in the physical world that take on this number of seven. The 7 days of creation, the fact that the most important country in the world, the country that Hashem has chosen as being the place where he focuses the majority of his attention on, is the country of Eretz Yisrael. As the Pasuk says, Tomid Einei Hashem Alekecha Bo, Hashem's eyes are constantly focused on Eretz Yisrael. And this land of Eretz Yisrael is actually the source from which all of those seven different types of climates emanate from. And as such, we find the Torah tells us that originally Hashem allowed the land of Israel to be inhabited by seven nations that represented seven klipos, in a sense, seven husks that covered up the holiness, the light of Eretz Yisrael. And it was only when the Jews succeeded in ridding Eretz Yisrael of those seven nations, could they be able to bring forth the true light of Eretz Yisrael, the true light, the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. Regarding the metals, the seven types of metals that are mentioned here, we find that when the Torah speaks about the praises of Eretz Yisrael, number one, Eretz Yisrael is known as the land which has seven special foods, the Shiva Saminim, as they're called, wheat, barley, the geffen, the grapes, figs, olives, dates, totaling seven altogether: chita, soira, geffen, te'ena, zeis shemen and vash, rimon, pomegranate, zeis shemen and vash. These seven special fruits, which contain, which represent and contain in them the light of Hashem, the sweetness, it's called the Noyam Ho'elyon, the heavenly splendor. And in addition, the land of Eretz Yisrael is also described as a land which has in it all of these metals. The Pasuk says, Eretz Asher Avoneho Barzel, it's a land whose stones are like barzel, steel, Omehararehu Tachtzev Nechoshes, and from its mountains you will bring forth copper. When we talk about the opposing nations to the land, to the nation of Klal Yisrael, these nations draw their strength, draw their energy from these metals, from these seven metals. We find the Torah tells us in the prophet Daniel that Nebuchadnezzar was one of the most powerful kings of the other nations, of these 70 nations. And it's interesting, the Ben Ish Chai points out, he discusses the name Nebuchadnezzar and explains each one of the letters, each part of the name. In the center of the word Nebuchadnezzar, you have the word Kavod. Kavod means honor, respect. Nebuchadnezzar symbolizes the Kavod of the Sitra Achra, the Kavod of the other nations. And Nebuchadnezzar had a vision, which is described in the book of Daniel, where he saw a great man, a giant, whose head was made from gold, and then the chest and arms were made from silver. He describes there four special metals. Rav Nosson Zalman Likutei Halachos tells us that just as we know Hashem's basic name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, which consists of four letters, those four letters represent the seven attributes of Hashem, so too in this case, even though in that vision that Nebuchadnezzar saw there were only four metals represented, in fact those four were representative of all seven. And so too, when we speak about the land of Eretz Yisrael, and within Eretz Yisrael, the most important city being Yerushalayim, and within Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, we know that in the Beis HaMikdash, the light of Hashem was contained and represented in vessels, in the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, which were made from these special metals. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Torah tells us that the nations that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash captured those kelim. They took those vessels. That was their main thing that they were after. The Pasuk says, Ves HaKelim Hevi Beis Oitzar Elokov. They were looking to take those kelim, which represented this Malchus of Hashem, the kingdom of Hashem, and capture that and try to make that subservient to their idols, the idols that they worshipped. And in the story, we're told that this king formed a giant and put it up on a mountain, and this giant was made of all of these seven metals, and it was positioned in such a way that each one of the metals was positioned correspondingly to the heavenly sphere that shone and gave strength to that metal. And in this manner, the king was able to construct this idol, in a sense, to which people were able to come and ask questions to and be able to receive advice and guidance. Rav Nosson Zal explains that Lahavdil, this was the opposite. We know that the Torah tells us, Zeh l'uma zeh oselukim, that in order for there to be free choice in this world, Hashem has designed the world in such a way that holiness and unholiness both seem to have matching corresponding parts. And it takes a person of truth, a man of truth, of sincerity, to be able to search carefully and be able to distinguish between what the ultimate truth is versus what seems to be true and is really false. In this case, what this king formed and designed corresponded to Lahavdil, what Hashem instructed the Jews to do in building a Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash had in it these types of metals. The Beis HaMikdash, being in Eretz Yisrael, being in Yerushalayim, being in the heart of the world, had in it, was composed of all seven climates, all seven metals, and corresponded to all seven of these heavenly spheres. And in the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah tells us, we just had it in last week's Parsha, in Parsha Shoftim, that whenever a Jew had any question, anything that they needed clarification in, they would go from wherever they were, they would go to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, and they would seek out the advice of the Kohanim, the Levim, the Sanhedrin. There were many different branches through which a person would be able to get the answers to any question they had, whether it pertained to religion or any other aspect of life. This knowledge, this Eitza Toiva, was found there. Now we find in Rabbi Nachman's book, Likutei Moran, in the first half of Likutei Moran, in chapter 61, This is a lecture that Rabbi Nachman gave on Rosh Hashanah, and it's a long discussion which has many parts to it. But part of this discussion, Rabbi Nachman discusses the circumstances that cause the Jews to be exiled, to be evicted from their country, which is one of the aspects of what's presented here in the story. And Rabbi Nachman also explains the fact that Hashem has given Bnei Yisrael the wisdom, the knowledge of the Soid Hoibur, the knowledge of astrology and astronomy, to be able to understand and interpret how all the heavenly spheres work, how they coordinate, and thereby how to be able to design the calendar, both the solar calendar, the lunar calendar, and to be able to coordinate between them by making leap years and by having the months vary from 30 days, 29 days, 30 days, 31 days, the different size of the month. According to the Torah, it comes out to be 29 and a half, approximately, days per month, and it fluctuates. This whole knowledge, this knowledge of Soid Hoibur, as it's called, and the knowledge of the Tahaluche Galgale Horakia, exactly how all of these spheres, heavenly spheres work, is a wisdom of holiness, which the rabbis of the Gemara, we find Masechta Rosh Hashanah, and several other places in Shas where this is discussed, showing that this is the peak of knowledge that the rabbis, the Chachamim, the great Tzaddikim possessed. And in fact, Hashem says to the Jewish people, Ki hi chochmaschem ubinaschem le'enei ho'amim. Hashem says that we should study the Torah and become proficient in it, because this is our chokhmah and bina, our knowledge and wisdom, for all the nations to see. And the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, page 75, that which chokhmah and bina is it that the Jews have, which the other nations can see? And the Gemara says this refers to the calculation of tkufos and mazolos, the seasons, the signs of the astrology. That knowledge is something which these other nations can see, can come to understand how great the knowledge of the great rabbis of Klal Yisrael is in these areas. So that, getting back to our story, this king used his secular knowledge to be able to design a corresponding, opposing picture to what Klal Yisrael possessed in the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. In order for it to be effective, in order to, for the king to be able to succeed in what he wanted to accomplish, which was conquering the whole world and amassing great wealth, Rabbi Nachman tells us in the story that this king knew that this image would only be effective as long as the king succeeded in taking those who were in a very high position and lower them, and take those who were low, downtrodden, and elevate them. Mashpil Geim and Magbia Shefolim. The fact is, Rabbi Nachman discusses this in several places in the Likutei Moharan, that this is how the kingdom of Hashem is described. And in fact, one example that Rabbi Nachman gives, when a person prays to Hashem, we know the Gemara tells us that there's a prerequisite, that before a person comes to see Hashem, whether it was in the Beis Hamikdash or today in personal tefillah, a person is supposed to first set aside money for charity. The Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar Yohiv Pruta v'Hodor Matzli. One of the rabbis would first set aside a coin for charity, and then he would pray. And he did this based on a pasuk, Va'ani b'tzedek ech zeponecho. With charity I come to see Hashem's face. Or when we speak about a Jew going to the Beis Hamikdash, the Holy Temple, the Torah says, V'lo yero ponai reikom. Hashem says, when you come to see me, don't come empty-handed. Bring a gift. Bring charity. Rabbi Nachman explains in Likutei Moharan that when a Jew gives charity, they're actually performing this act. They're subtracting, they're deducting from the rich, and they're elevating the poor. They're being mashpil geim and magbia shefolim. This itself is an act of judgment. It's a judgment. I'm looking at a situation and I'm analyzing and I'm coming to a decision that I probably have more than this other person. And this person needs the particular money that I have more than I do at this point, and therefore I'm willing to take to lessen what I have and to increase what this other person has. And Rabbi Nachman says that this is an act of mishpat, of justice, which helps focus a person's tefillah, a person's prayer. By doing this, he's acknowledging, number one, the kingdom of Hashem, because if I were to look at my possessions as mine, this is my money, I own this. If this is mine, I have no reason to give it to anybody else. Whereas if the understanding is that the possessions that I have are not mine, it's Hashem's. Hashem is leasing it to me. Hashem is allowing me to use it if I comply to certain conditions. If I play by Hashem's rules, Hashem says, I'm willing to let you keep 90% of your profits, whatever you earn, on condition that you designate 10% for charity. You give that 10% to the poor. So here, by a person, through this act of tzedakah, a person is mamlech Hashem, and this helps the person, this makes an incredible connection to see to it that the person's prayer should be effective, and the person should be able to get the proper answer that they're looking for from Hashem. Each time a person prays, they're seeking advice, guidance, counsel from Hashem. When the tefillah is supported with this power of mashpil geimu magbia shvolim, that's an assurance. That helps to assure that the person will receive the answer to their prayer. And we find that, unfortunately, this king made the mistake of taking away power from the wrong place. He ended up approaching this minister who had gotten permission from this king's grandfather to wear his talis and tefillin, and this king ended up taking that away. Then we find that Rabbi Nachman tells us that this king had a dream in which he saw all 12 signs of the zodiac, 12 mazolos, and he saw the bull and the ram among these 12 symbols of the zodiac. He saw them laughing at him, mocking him. And he woke up with great anger and fear, and he had the chronicles brought before him, and sure enough, he saw that the bull and the ram, those are the ones that will eventually wipe out his children, his family. And he was filled with tremendous fear. He tried getting the proper interpretation until finally a great chacham came to him and said to him that he has the knowledge of all 365 paths of the sun and where they will shine, and that there's a special rod, a metal rod, a great metal rod, and a person who has any type of fear, when they come to that metal rod, their fear is alleviated. And sure enough, the king followed this chacham. The king took his wife and children, and they followed the chacham. And on the path, we were told that there was an angel who's designated over anger. And this angel, he's the one who needs to be asked for the proper path for the person to take. Because there's a derech yosher, there's a proper path which a person can go on, which leads them to success, to goodness. And there is a path which leads to a fire that's so powerful that 4 parsa, 16 miles, 12 to 16 miles from where that fire is, if anybody approaches, they get burnt immediately. So sure enough, they inquired by this angel regarding what path to take, and he told them of this path with the fire. It's very possible that the reason why the king was led on this path was because we were told before this king had anger. After his dream, he was filled with tremendous anger. And anger, unfortunately, misleads a person, has the person fall victim to this angel's power. So sure enough, this angel pointed them in the direction of the fire. They approached it, and the chacham, as soon as he got any kind of feeling that they were getting anywhere near close, he told the king, I cannot go any further. If you want to go, you have to continue on your own. And this king was able to see ahead, and he was able to see that there were kings and Jews dressed in talis and tefillin that were walking through the fire, and they weren't being harmed in any way. So this king saw these other kings walking through the fire. He figured he'll be able to do it also. And sure enough, he kept going. The chacham stayed back. The king and his wife and children persisted. They kept going, and they were destroyed by the fire. And Rabbi Nachman explained that what this king didn't realize is that the reason why those other kings were seen walking through the fire, not being harmed, together with Jews who were wearing talis and tefillin, was because that the fact that those kings allowed Jews to practice religion in their kingdoms, that's what served as a protection for those kings, for their kingdom. That's what protected them from being harmed from fire. Fire is also a display of Hashem's kingdom and judgment. We know that Gehenim, the final punishment, is referred to as the fires of Gehenim. And in fact, we're told that Hashem's name of justice, of kingdom, one of Hashem's names, which represents justice and kingdom, is Hashem's name Elokim. The word Elokim is used in the Chumash to refer to a judge. And the word Elokim also symbolizes kingdom, Velokim Malki Mikedem, that the Arizal tells us that Hashem's name Elokim, if you take each one of the letters as a word, you fill it out, you spell it as a word, Aleph, spelled Aleph Lamed Pei, the way you pronounce it, Lamed, spelled Lamed Mem Dalet, and so on and so forth, the word Elokim has the value of Eish, 301 exactly, showing that fire is one of the displays of Hashem's kingdom and justice. If a person is subservient to the kingdom of Hashem, if they comply with Hashem's authority, that serves as a protection, which is displayed especially by the observance of these two basic mitzvahs, the tzitzis and tefillin, that serves to protect a person from these fires. And if not, the person comes into contact with fire and the fire is able to destroy them. And this is in fact what this king saw when his stargazers told him that they observed, they saw in these astrological symbols that the bull and the ram were mocking him. He thought that by not having any cattle or sheep in his kingdom, that would be his protection. He misinterpreted the sign. It was actually the protection would come from the allowing the Jews to observe their mitzvahs. We mentioned previously that we have several cases in history where there were situations like this, where even though the Gemara tells us that there is chachma bagoyim, that among non-Jews there is knowledge, there is wisdom, there is understanding, however, there's also the potential of misinterpreting, of seeing something and not seeing it with clarity, and thereby being able to misinterpret it. This is one of the differences. In fact, Rabbi Nachman speaks about this, lahavdil, even among the Jews, that there are two classifications of prophets. There's Moshe Rabbeinu, who's in a class of his own, versus all the other prophets. And the Gemara tells us that you'll find in the Torah that when Hashem addresses the other prophets, he speaks to them, their prophecy is told in the form Koi Omar Hashem. Approximately this is what Hashem said. Koi means like this, something like this. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah points out, when he spoke prophecy in the name of Hashem, he said, Ze hadovor asher tzivu Hashem. This is exactly what Hashem said. Rabbi Nachman quotes the terminology that's used in the Zohar Kodesh, other places, that Moshe Rabbeinu's vision of Hashem was referred to as aspaklaria hameira, a glass through which a person can see through with perfect clarity, in a sense. Whereas the other prophets were compared to him on a much lower level, their prophecy is compared to aspaklaria sheino meira, where it's less clear. If we find that among the Jews there are these two classes, then lahavdil, how much more so, even though there can be prophets among the nations of the world, as we find the case of Bilam Harosha or other cases, and there can be Chachomim who have high levels of knowledge and wisdom, obviously the clarity with which they see cannot be compared to the type of clarity of the great Tzaddikim. We find the Torah tells us, describing Hashem, that Hashem is called Eish Oichla, a destructive fire. And the Targum and the Zohar Kodesh say the achli kola, the shatzi kola, which has the power to destroy anything that gets in its way, in its path. The Gemara tells us, and the Sforim expound on this, that one of the most important ingredients in the talis is the tcheles. Tcheles represents the blue wool, the string that has the blue wool on it, and we're told that the word tcheles corresponds to this word, the achli kola v'shatzi kola. Achli means to destroy, that there is a power by Hashem to destroy, and this tcheles represents something, a protection from that destruction. When the Torah describes the coming of Moshiach, it says that Hashem is going to take the world by its four corners and shake it, and shake the Rishoim off the world in a sense. And the Gemara points out the symbolism, the four corners, that a Jew who wears the talis, which has the four corners to it, that serves as a protection. By doing that, they bind themselves to the four letters of Hashem's name, to the four corners of holiness, and are protected from being evicted, from being removed, as in the case of the Rishonim. And this is why, in fact, the Pasuk says, V'atem. Here's a very interesting point. Hashem is described as fire. A person would say, fire? How in the world can somebody get close to... The Torah says a person is supposed to try to get close to Hashem. How does one get close to Hashem? So the Pasuk tells us, V'atem hadvekim b'Hashem alekechem, you, the Jewish people, when you attach yourselves to Hashem through the Torah, through its mitzvahs, by complying with the mitzvahs of the Torah, chayim kulchem hayoim, you draw life from Hashem. The fire is no longer a destructive fire, but on the contrary, it becomes mo'irei oyer. It becomes a lantern that gives forth light, not a harmful, destructive type of fire. And in fact, the Mefarshim point out that this pasuk, V'atem hadveikim b'Hashem alekechem, is a remez, alludes to the Kriya Shema. We had mentioned earlier that the Shema is where a person declares their faith in Hashem. We're told that in the Shema, there are 248 words corresponding to the 248 organs in the human body. And when a person recites the Shema, declaring their faith, their loyalty to Hashem, by doing that, they're binding every single organ of the body to Hashem. The commentaries point out that you'll see that if you count the number of words, there's actually 245. And this is why it's so important for a Jew to pray with a minyan in a synagogue, in a Beis HaKnesses, with a minyan, because when the Chazan repeats the words Hashem Elokeichem Emes, when he repeats those words, those are the three additional words that complete that number 248 to make the body complete. However, the question is, if you look in the Torah, the word emes is not part of the paragraph of tzitzis. It's not part of any one of those three paragraphs. The v'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, the v'hoyom shamoa, the v'yomer. We finish with the words Hashem Elokechem emes. The word emes is not, we say Ani Hashem Elokechem. The sentence in the Torah finishes with the words Ani Hashem Elokechem. Where does the emes come in? And here the Mefarshim point out that in order, that's part of completing this number of 248, to see that the body is complete. And this is what's alluded to in this pasuk, V'atem. The word atem, Aleph Tov Mem, is the same letters as the word emes. V'atem hadveikim b'Hashem alekechem. When you will take this emes and attach it to Hashem alekechem, chayim kulchem hayoim. Your entire body, all 248 organs, will live, will be alive. You'll have this emunah. You'll have this shlemus of emunah, and you'll be alive. And the reason why this word emes has to be attached to the Shema, to this declaration of faith, is because a person could say, faith is that which I don't see. Faith is that which I don't understand. I can't understand completely. If that's the case, one person decides to believe in this, and I decide to believe in that. What if I decide to believe that that door is a monkey? And I say, that's my belief. I believe that. And a person would say, that's also a form of faith. There's emunos kuzvios. There are false beliefs. So the question is, when is faith classified as being a faith that counts, that's worthwhile? And when is faith something that could be silly? And the answer is, when faith is preceded by truth, that's when the faith is something that's worthwhile, that's good, that's positive. When there isn't truth, when there's no foundation of truth, then the faith is meaningless. This is why we say in our prayer, Emes ve'emuna chok v'lo yavur. These two must always go together. It's interesting to note that when a person wants to fool somebody, they take an object and they dress it up like something that it really isn't. Very often a person can take something that's worth a dollar, that's worth $5, and dress it up elegantly and put a certain type of lighting on it, put it in a certain type of stand at where that item, you would look at it and you would think that it costs $10,000 or $25,000 because of the type of dressing, the window dressing that you've put on it, either window dressing or dressing up the item. Or even in the case of a human being sometimes, you can have a person who is not necessarily a person of royalty or class or substance, and take that person and dress them up elegantly, and suddenly that person gets the appearance as if they were somebody extremely important and royal and worthwhile. So that sheker, when we talk about falsehood, one of the things that allows falsehood to be misconstrued and misinterpreted for truth is this concept of begodim, the clothing. Clothing is something which can be misused to fool, you know, to give, to broadcast a false kind of message. Rav Nosson Zal points out on the Kutei Halachos that the word, one of the codes that's used in the Torah by which we decipher meanings of words, is where we replace a letter of the alphabet with a letter on the opposite end of the alphabet. This is called atbash. For example, we would take the first letter of the alphabet, the aleph, and we would substitute a tuf for it. We would take bays, the second letter from the beginning, and substitute a shin, the second letter from the end. The word sheker, which means falsehood, lies, if we substitute, the substitute for bays is shin. I'm sorry, the substitute for shin is bays. The substitute for kuf is gimel. And the substitute for resh is dalet, the word beged. Beged is the atbash. I might have confused the letters, but it works out exactly. The word beged, which means clothing, is actually a secret code for the term sheker. Because the clothing is something which can and usually does in this world fool people. Whereas this is one of the reasons why Hashem has given us this gift, the mitzvah of tzitzis. Tzitzis, the intent of tzitzis is a garment which when a person wears it, this represents their connection to Hashem, who is Emes. That Hashem Elokeichem Emes. This is what helps me be reminded at all times of the 613 commandments which make up the book of truth, and which remind me always to see to it, to make sure to be dressed in a manner that I'm broadcasting truth and not falsehood, not the opposite. This is the symbolism in the tzitzis and also in the tefillin. The tefillin also represents this concept of emes. It's interesting to note that the Gemara tells us that a thief who steals in a certain manner is punished by having to pay back double what they stole. If they stole $100, they have to return $200, kefel. We're talking about a ganav specifically. There are two exceptions to this rule, which are if a thief steals an ox or a bull, or he steals a sheep, there, the Gemara tells us that for stealing a sheep or a ram, he would have to pay back four. Not stealing it and slaughtering it or selling it to somebody else, he would have to pay back four times as much as what he originally stole. in the case where he stole and slaughtered or sold an ox or a bull, he would have to pay back five times as much. And Rav Nosson Zal points out in the Likutei Halachos that this is tied into, again, the major things that these two represent. The ox, the bull, represents tefillin. Tefillin is represented by this number five. The five, we know the tefillin are composed of two batim, two boxes. The box that's worn on the head is made up of four individual compartments. The box that's worn on the hand is one large compartment, making up a total of five. The sheep, on the other hand, or the ram, from which we get the wool that's used to make the tzitzis. The tzitzis are referred to always in the Torah as arba kanfos, the four corners of the tzitzis. This is what these two represent in their form of holiness when they're applied properly. And therefore, when chas v'shalom, a person does the opposite, a person goes against Hashem, against the Torah, in stealing, and not, if stealing alone weren't bad enough, but he tries to erase, to wipe out completely the fact that he stole it by slaughtering it, killing it, and eating it, or by selling it to somebody else, getting rid of it, getting it out of his possession as if it could never be discovered that I'm the one that stole it. Here again, the penalty is that these two, the bull and the ram, the tefillin and the tzitzis, are the ones who avenge his crime in obligating him to have to pay back this greater amount. When we had completed the story, we mentioned that Rabbi Nachman mentioned that the third chapter in Tehillim, I'm sorry, the second chapter in Tehillim, is a source for getting clarification and interpretation of this story. And just to run through it quickly, this third chapter begins, as the commentaries tell us, where Hashem is announcing to the nations of the world that Hashem is going to bring forth a king, a Moshiach, a Melech HaMoshiach, who will come from the family of King David. And upon the nations of the world hearing this, during the time of King David, the leading nation of the Goyim were the Philistines, the Pelishtim. They immediately gathered all of their armies to try to attack and destroy the Jewish people. And this is what this chapter of Tehillim says, that Yisyatzu Malchei Eretz, the kings of the world, gather together and they rise up to unite Al Hashem Val Mashichoi, to try to attack Hashem and His Anointed One, Hashem and the Tzaddik. And the pasuk continues, Nenatko Es Moisroi Semoi, they try to throw off the straps that Hashem has binding them, V'nashlicha Mimenu Avoi Semoi, and to remove the strings. This pasuk symbolizes these moisroi semoi and avoi semoi. Moisroi semoi represent the straps, which represent the tefillin, representing loyalty and allegiance to Hashem. The avoi semoi, the strings, representing the tzitzis. These two which bind us to Hashem. Interestingly, the Zohar HaKadosh comments that in Shir HaShirim, there's a pasuk which refers to Hashem's as king, as Melech Osur Borohotim, a king who is bound in straps. So that again, by a Jew strapping these tefillin upon himself, these tefillin, and encircling himself with the tzitzis, by doing that he's binding himself to the kingdom of Hashem. The pasuk continues, Yoshev Bashamayim Yischok, Hashem, who resides on high in heaven, laughs. Just as we saw in the story, the bull and the ram that laughed at that king. Oz yedaber elemoi bi'apoi v'charoinoi yivalemoi. The pasuk continues that these kings, these other kings, when they plan and plot against Hashem, against the Jews, Hashem will release His anger, His af and charoin, and will confuse them with that, as we found in the story, that this king wanted to try to find out what path to go on, and it was the angel who was created through anger and who was appointed over anger that ended up misleading him onto the wrong path, that path of the fire. We said that the king they tried to form this idol and put it up on a mountain, this idol that was combined of all seven metals, and by focusing it to correspond to these seven heavenly spheres, Hashem says, Va'ani nosachti malki al tzion har kodshi. They can do whatever they want. I have already prepared, I have already designated and anointed my king on my mountain, on the Har HaBayis, on the mountain of the Beis HaMikdash. The pasuk continues, Toroyim b'shevet barzel, I will strike at them with a metal rod, kichli yoitzer tenaptzein, and they'll be destroyed, they'll be smashed with like a vessel made of clay, of pottery, by this metal rod. And then the chapter finally concludes, V'ato, and now, Malochim, kings, Haskilu, take counsel, think things over. Hivosru Shevtei Oretz, you who are the judges of the world, analyze your situation. Ivdu es Hashem b'yira, serve Hashem with fear, V'gilu b'roda, and rejoice with trembling. This, the Meforshim point out, refers to, again, these two mitzvahs of tefillin and tzitzis. The Gemara tells us that there's a pasuk that says that the nations of the world will see that the name of Hashem is upon the Jewish people, and they'll fear you. The Gemara says, how will they see it? Through the tefillin. They'll see your tefillin, and they'll be filled with fear. And the pasuk continues and concludes, this chapter concludes, with the words, v'soivdu derech, they will lose their way, they'll lose their path, ki yivar kim'at apoi, and be burned in a fraction of the anger of Hashem, ashrei kol choisevoi, fortunate are those who cling to Hashem, and who have a loyalty to Hashem, they're the ones. The word ashrei means fortunate, and the word ashurei also means footsteps. They're the ones who will be led in the right path. They will not go on that path leading into the fire that destroys them, but rather they'll be led on the path of the Derech HaChaim, the path of life. There's a lot more to say about this, but we'll leave it here for now. Suffice this for now. Once again, these stories have extraordinary depth. Whatever we say about them, we're not even touching the surface, but it's to give us ideas and concepts to show, for us to be able to derive the mussar in this, for a Jew to realize how privileged we are to have the opportunity to show our loyalty to the King of all kings through these simple mitzvahs, by observing these simple mitzvahs that a Jew starts their day with, the talis and tefillin, and the Shema, declaration of faith, that we believe that despite the fact that the Jews appear to be going through such difficulties, in the end, we believe that we're going to see that the enemies of the Jews are going to go on a path which leads to fire and destruction, and the Jews in the end will be zeichet to be bound in the book of life, in the Sefer HaChaim, through their loyalty and devotion and faith in Hashem. If there are any questions or comments now, question was raised, what about secular Jews who do not cling to Hashem? Hashem has given them the basic seven mitzvahs. There are seven commandments which, if a non-Jew complies with those seven mitzvahs, they've observed what they need to observe, and they have their connection to those seven heavenly spheres, to the seven metals, to whatever connection they can have to Hashem. A Jew, on the contrary, has the obligation and has the privilege to connect Hashem via the 613 commandments of the Torah. If a person doesn't, then they're not connecting with life. They're leading a life not of a human being, but leading a life of a bird or an animal. The fact that Hashem distinguishes a human being from other levels of creation is specifically through the das, through the intelligence, which a person shows by connecting with the Torah, which is Hashem's intelligence. It's the knowledge and wisdom of Hashem. We've completed the fourth story in Rabbi Nachman's stories, and I hope that the following Sunday at the same time we'll begin the next story in this series, the fifth story.